You know that thing where you get an amazing pair of shoes at a really great price and want to tell everyone about it? Yeah, so do we. Here at Designer Shoe Warehouse, we'll give you something to brag about. Like the latest styles from brands you love, or the trends everyone's obsessing over, or shoes that make you feel like, well, you. So go ahead, show off a little. Find shoes that get you at prices that get your budget. Head to your DSW store or DSW.com today. DSW. Let us surprise you.
Nerds! Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ever Google a money question and end up 12 tabs deep with 12 different answers? This podcast is your shortcut back to clarity. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast breaks down financial decisions with a team of trusted journalists. They explain the why behind decisions like investing, home buying, and choosing credit cards with clear, research-backed insights. No jargon, no misinformation. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
Whoa, okay. This one says you get a free phone if you switch. Hey, this one also says you get a free phone if you switch.
Yeah, they all do, hon.
Huh. The T-Mobile one says their customers had the lowest wireless bills versus the other big guys over the past 5 years. And their latest experience plans have Netflix included, plus a year of Dash Pass by DoorDash.
Mm-mm-mm. Hang on, let me see that. Oh, yeah, we're switching.
That's what I'm talking about. Do we clap now or...
At T-Mobile, get savings that keep stacking up. That's value you can feel every day. And right now, bring your phone to T-Mobile and we'll give you $400 when you switch.
Savings based on Harris X billing snapshots from Q3 2021 to Q4 2025 compared to average AT&T and Verizon bills. Comparison excludes discounts, credits, and optional charges. $400 with new account on qualifying line. Unlocked device credit ported 90 plus days with device and carrier and timely redemption required. Virtual MasterCard typically takes 14 weeks, no cash access, and expires in 6 months. Card issued by Sunrise Banks N.A. member FDIC. Visit T-Mobile.com.
Yes, indeed. Welcoming your phone calls and text messages, your lawn and garden questions at 651-461-9226 on this holiday weekend. Julie Weisenhorn from the University of Minnesota is with us, and we have a special guest who's been with us before, but he is still special. And Julie, why don't you do the proper introduction and tell us about John?
Well, I think that eventually John will just be a regular. So
I think you're right.
So, but he's a special guy anyway. So, yeah, John Trappe, Dr. John Trappe, he is our turf educator in extension. He's an agronomist, got a wealth of information about lawns and grasses. He also is an environmentalist and conservationist. And so I have heard from him in passing that he propagates chestnut trees in his house, and he does all sorts of other things like that. So, John, it's so great to have you here. I really appreciate you being on.
Yeah, thanks again. I've been really looking forward to getting back on, so I'm very happy to be here.
Excellent. I know our listeners are too, both Julie and John, because I'm seeing a whole lot of yard I haven't seen for months. It seems like I'm not saying it looks good, but at least it's there. And let me alert our listeners: as long as both John and Julie are on, if you have any kind of a turf question, any questions about your yard, by all means, give us a call or send a text. Again, here's the number: 651-461-9226. You know, we tend to get busy during this hour, big time. So don't wait. Call us or text us with your lawn and garden question. Now, let me ask John a question, Julie. People, as Julie will know, John, we'll get usually pretty early in the season. When can I rake my lawn? You can't do it yet, right?
Yeah, I would avoid trying to do too much just yet and allow things to basically start to warm up, the soil to dry out just a little bit, so that way when you're walking on it and you are if you do try to remove any kind of dead or dying debris, you're not pulling up plants that would have come back. So try to have patience. I know everybody's basically got cabin fever and looking to get back out there. But yeah, just try to have patience and wait it out. And the lawn will start to green up soon enough.
Okay. I'm looking at another text that just came in, and it says this: if I overseeded my established lawn in the fall, can I use starter fertilizer in the spring? Any negatives to that?
Yeah, you can use starter fertilizer, and that's actually a pretty good strategy. If you've put down seed with the Minnesota phosphorus fertilizer law, you can apply fertilizers containing phosphorus if you have seeded. So I think that's a good strategy for doing that. But I would always recommend anytime someone is trying to establish anything from seed to conduct a soil test just to verify what your soil nutrient test levels are at and if phosphorus would be beneficial.
Hey, John, do starter fertilizers ever contain pre-emergence?
Some starters, there's one product that I know of for sure that is safe on seedlings, and that's Siguron is the name of it. But otherwise, there's most other pre-emergent herbicides may have some activity depending on what you're trying to seed. So that's a great point, Julie, as far as considerations to be made. If you're considering trying to overseed or establish a new area while also trying to prevent things like summer annuals like crabgrass.
And would the packaging say on there, do not put on new seed or this contains a pre-emergent, or is it easy to see that on the package, do you think?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, so all herbicides, all pesticides are going to have a pesticide label. You're required by law to follow that label, but just follow the instructions in there. They'll tell you how many days after you've put down, say, a pre-emergent that you can seed, for example.
Great.
All right. Looking at another question from a listener that just came in. Last fall, it says, I planted a bare root yellow lady slipper. The grower's instructions said to cover it with leaves after planting. When should I uncover it, is the question.
I would let it just come up through the leaves, unless you piled, a foot of leaves on top of it. But I would let it just kind of come up naturally. You can push those leaves aside, and just when it starts to come up, just tuck those leaves around it and protect that roots, the roots from any kind of weather changes. But, yeah, that's a good luck, because that is a tricky plant to grow, but I'm glad you're following the grower's instructions. That's important.
Very good. Here's one for John. How soon after applying crabgrass preventer can I apply grass seed?
Well, we actually just touched on that. I would consult with the label, because that's going to depend on which product you applied and the rate that you applied it at. So just check the label of the preventer herbicide, and it should be able to tell you exactly what to do.
Okay. How do I get my Canna rhizomes to get them ready to plant, is the next question.
Okay. So take them out of where you've been storing them over the winter and clean them off. Hopefully they don't have any mold. If they do, you can scrape it off or wash it off, and maybe treat with a fungicide for that mold so it doesn't grow back. Cut off any damaged areas, blackened areas, anything that feels soft. You can use a nice clean knife for that, a nice sharp knife. And then you can go ahead and pot them up and kind of get them going in your house right now. Put them in a sunny window, water them, and then transplant them. If you're going to put them in your garden, you can transplant them when the temperatures are warmer, or if you're going to put them into a container, you could do that too.
All right. Again, here's our phone number. It also happens to be our text number, 651-461-9226. If you're just joining us, Julie Weisenhorn and John Trappe, Dr. John Trappe from the U of M, answering those questions. And I'm thinking, Julie and John, this might be, besides your expertise, this might be a good reason to get on the university website. What are some, texter says, good ground covers for our area here in the Twin Cities?
Yeah, so we have the Plant Elements of Design, which is a plant selection database tool, and you can enter in your site conditions and click on ground cover, whether it's a woody ground cover or herbaceous ground cover, whatever you're looking for, and click search, and you'll come up with any plants that match those criteria. So that's where you can find non-turf ground covers. John, over to you.
So if, grasses are obviously a great ground cover, but grasses are going to require a little bit more sunlight than some of the traditional broadleaf ground covers. So I would just pay attention to that, just make sure that it's getting at least a couple of hours of direct sunlight. If you're looking for something that's very low maintenance, the fine fescues are a great option for having limited mowing requirements and other inputs like fertilizer and pesticides. So the fine fescues are great.
What about something like a bee lawn?
Yeah, bee lawns are a great option, and obviously they're really growing in popularity. So a bee lawn is just simply incorporating pollinator-friendly species for our native and naturalized pollinators. And we have all kinds of resources on the Extension website, extension.umn.edu, for finding information on how to plant and maintain a bee lawn.
All right. I know we have to take a break here. I want to pass along this text and maybe give you both time to think about it. Good question. And then we'll take a break. Again, if you are just joining us and if you happen to have a question about your lawn, you've hit the jackpot, because not only do we have Julie Weisenhorn's expertise, but Dr. John Trappi, can we call him the turf? John, would you mind if we call you the turf guru?
I suppose. I don't mind. Okay. It wouldn't have been my first choice, but
yeah. All right, Green, I think, was one title we used once.
We'll do some research and see if we can't get some other answers before other titles. But anyway, let me pose this question, then we'll take a quick break. Turf question. I cannot find, Texter says, an organic lawn care company to serve the Lindstrom area due to long distance from the metro. Question is, if I start to do my own organic lawn care, where can I find easy to follow steps as I want to improve my soil each year and crowd out weeds? I have completed soil testing at the U of M and cannot understand what to do next. Lots of clay soil in this Lindstrom area. You guys think about that. We'll take this break and be back on the other side of our Smart Garden Show. 38 degrees. We're on our way to 61, about the same for Easter Sunday tomorrow, with a chance of showers. But how about this? Wednesday, we could hit near 81 degrees. Oh. Right now, 38 degrees here on News Talk 830. This is WCCO. Good Saturday morning to you. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show here every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour. Thanks for joining us this morning. We have, if you are just joining us, Julie Weisenhorn and Dr. John Trappi from the University of Minnesota answering lawn and garden questions. I emphasize lawn because John Trappi is our turf expert this morning. You probably have heard him on the station before, and you will hear him again, as Julie and John promise. But we have a busy morning today. Let's see how many folks we can help out. Let's grab some phone calls. But before we do, I posed a question from a listener about organic lawn care. What would you guys have for an answer?
So the first thing is just to address the trying to find an organic, a company that would do organic lawn care. And I would suggest starting with the Minnesota Nursery and Landscape Association website and then searching from there. So that's mnla.biz. And you can just search for organic lawn care in your area, and you might be able to find somebody who was unlisted otherwise. But as far as resources for organic lawn care, we don't have anything that's specifically that's listed as like a truly organic lawn care option. We do have a low input turf website that's on turf.umn.edu, where we have basically just some low input options. There's also an older document called Fertilizing Lawns that was released in, it's a little bit older, but it also has some information on some of the, some different organic lawn care options. Another thing you can do is just reach out to me directly and then find me, and we can chat about some different organic options as well. So, I think those are both great starting points, but that's a great suggestion as far as, something that we could improve upon and make some more resources available.
Very good. Now let's get back to some phone calls. Donna, first up, you're calling in from Bloomington, I believe. Donna, thanks for waiting. What is your question, please?
We have large mounds of dirt from the activity of moles. How do we eradicate the moles, and how do we prevent future problems like that?
Moles. Oh, big question.
Ooh. But if there are moles in the lawn, you know, I always suggest just basically grabbing a lawn chair and a spade and trying to control them that way, because there's some other control options like baits and things like that for removing them. And you can't really control their, you know, what they're feeding on, because they're mostly feeding on earthworms. So, you know, and generally speaking, we want those in our lawns. So really, it's just manually removing them, unfortunately. And there's not much that you can do for, in the way of discouraging them.
You could always call a pest control person who can set,
sure.
Well, unless you have maybe some small pets, or that's kind of dangerous, I guess. But, there's those what I call guillotines.
Those spike things. That's it.
Yeah, that's a tough, because they can do a whole lot of damage. I've seen it.
What should she do about the mounds and stuff?
Great point. So I would just suggest just stepping them down anytime you see them, and especially before mowing, just to make sure that you don't end up scalping or anything. But if you just step them down, typically they retrace their steps, a couple of times a day. They retrace their burrows a couple of times a day. So they're kind of easy to track where they're at. If you're just kind of patient and just watch them, you can get them that way.
I know we're not talking, it's not a critter show, but are there usually more than one at a time? Is there like a family of them, like mice?
There definitely can be, but a lot of times they just a single mole can do quite a bit of damage.
Wow.
It's really, that's kind of a silver lining. It's, if you remove one, a lot of times you can remove a lot of the damage, but sometimes there's more than one.
Yeah. All right, Donna, good luck. Marlis is next up here calling in from Lakeville this morning. Marlis, what is your question, please?
Yes, good morning. My question is about African violet. I've had one as a gift for a couple of years, and it did fine. Then when it needed a bigger pot, it came in a plastic pot. I put it in what I thought was the ultimate, in a clay pot.
Right.
And since the leaves have started, they look pinched. They kind of curve downward. Every time the outer leaf would hit the edge of the pot, it would rot and fall off at that point. And it just kept doing it. And I called the extension office, got some good help. But I'm wondering, she said, put it into a plastic pot because violets draw the salt into the salt gets drawn into the clay pot. Violets don't like that. And the thing, it was blooming beautifully. It had just finished blooming, and it has four more shoots coming up. It's trying to bloom, but it looks like it's dying. It has pinched, brown brown on some of the leaves. And I'm just wondering if you've heard of that before. I thought clay pots were the ultimate.
Yeah, I don't know of anything about the salt. How are you fertilizing it? Are you using an African violet fertilizer?
Yes, I am. And it started blooming beautifully after that.
Okay. And are you using it at half strength or full strength?
I feed it once a month at what the full strength it says for them.
I've repotted it into a
plastic now.
Okay.
I put it back into a plastic. I'm going to see what happens. But I just thought I need all the knowledge I can get. It looks like it's going to pass out on me.
Yeah. I don't know if it could just be transplants shock also. Sometimes they're sensitive about that. But, yeah, I think either pot would have been fine. I would hold back on the fertilizer because that's a very small amount of soil, and it could be too much fertilizer for the plant, and it could be burning the plant. And then be careful, water it from the bottom versus from the top, because it can get some crown rot on it, and sometimes it can also damage those initial leaves that are at the base of the plant. So see how it goes. Call back in. Love to hear how it's doing in its plastic pot. And we do have a website on African violets on our houseplant section at extension.umn.edu. But I don't think there's anything about salt.
Okay.
But I'd hold back on the fertilizer.
I know we have to take a break for weather, because it's going to be quite a change coming up. But I wanted to pose this question because it is probably on a lot of folks' mind, including yours truly. Will lawns recover after last year's drought? What do you think, John?
Well, the silver lining with having this all this snow is that we are you know, recharging groundwater table. And, you know, this has been, you know, kind of a great winter for that. So, but the lawns, you know, I think, let's just say I'm bullish or I'm optimistic that they're going to bounce back. So I think this has been a great winter for that.
Yeah, for sure. That's good. We wait and see. All right, hang on. We'll take this break. We have about another half hour of the show to go, so don't go away. 651-461-9226. Here on 830 WCCO, stay with us. Good Saturday morning to you. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show here every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour. Welcoming your lawn and garden questions at 651-461-9226. If you're just joining us, Julie Weishorn and Dr. John Trappe in from the University of Minnesota answering those lawn and garden questions, especially today if you have a turf question. For John Trappe, that's great. Or any garden question, of course, we take as we always do. Boy, there's just so many callers and texters as well. Let's get back to it. Roger, I think, is next up. We've been waiting in St. Paul to ask you a question. Roger, thank you. What is your question?
Good morning. Thank you. It's for John, and it's not a turf question, but my dad collected American chestnuts probably 80 or 90 years ago, and we've kept them in a quart jar. Is there any chance they're viable?
There are if they were kept dry with low humidity and you know, there's a pretty good chance of that. I mean, you basically have nothing, you know, there's really no harm in trying. But there is a reinvigorated effort for releasing a new genetically modified American chestnut that's resistant to the blight. So that could be grafted onto those legacy American chestnuts that you have from your dad. So that's something to consider and could be kind of a neat compromise for still being able to grow a tree that's functionally extinct.
A neat idea.
Functionally extinct. I have never heard that. That's kind of scary sounding.
I'm going to write that down. Thank you, Roger, for that. Gene is on the horn calling in from Egan, I believe, this morning. Thank you for waiting. Gene, what's your question?
Hi there. My husband recently discovered a couple of chemicals he uses on the lawn. One I know people have used for a long, long time. The other one I think is relatively new, at least to the garden centers. Milorganite. Can you overdo milorganite? Because with my husband, more is better for everything. And the other one is this type of lawn aerating chemical. And then you put this down and it kind of eats away. It's essentially doing the job of when you come around with those aerating machines. Instead, it does it internally in the ground and kind of attacks some of the... Anyhow, it opens up air pockets down there. I can't remember what it's called, but... Those two things, I'm wondering if you can overdo either one of them.
Well, I certainly think you can overdo. I mean, you can overdo water, for example. So, but I would, you know, as far as let's address the milorganite first. I would just make sure that you have a soil test that's showing that you need to apply phosphorus because there is phosphorus in the milorganite fertilizer, and I would just first and foremost ensure that. You know, that you're applying appropriately according to the Minnesota Phosphorus Fertilizer Law. But the other thing is that, you know, there is nitrogen and iron, and sometimes you can create flushes of growth if you're over-fertilizing. I would just fertilize based on your plant needs and, you know, as far as just notice on how the plant itself is growing. And, you know, you can certainly over-fertilize, and I would... we do have a, you know, on our website, we do have a fertilizer schedule as far as recommendations on how much to fertilize in terms of nitrogen, and that's where I would start with that product. The liquid lawn dethatcher, typically, you know, I'll just be frank and say that those products typically do not work. So for the most part, I would, you know, I think you might be able to overdo it. I'm not sure how much is being put down, but But if that's your goal, is trying to remove the thatch, realistically, the best way of doing that is through an actual aerification process or mechanical aerification.
John, I was wondering if Jean was going to be alluding to gypsum on her aeration question.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, so gypsum is a calcium product, and it's really it's just a way of providing soluble calcium for your plants. If the question is whether or not if you can over-apply it, I think you certainly can. Again, your soil test would tell you what your calcium levels are and whether or not your soil would benefit from gypsum. So I think that sounds like a really great starting point for really just seeing if indeed you actually need to apply it. And there would even be recommendations on the soil test report for telling you how much to apply.
Let's talk about that a little bit. We had a comment earlier from a listener, a texter, about getting a soil test. The U of M does it. What is the process to get that done?
So the University of Minnesota does have a soil testing lab, and as far as on their website, is soiltest.cfans.umn.edu. I know that's a lot, but if you just web search for soil test UMN, you will find it. But there's some recommendations on there on how to collect a soil sample for your lawn or garden, and then, again, how to interpret and understand the soil test report, the results from your soil test report. So that's where I would start, but anytime is a great time. Anytime when the ground is actually thawed is a great time to collect a soil sample, and I think that's a great it's a great starting point if you don't know what your soil test values are, or if you have a new new home or garden area or anything like that. It's a relatively cheap. I think it's around $19 for a basic soil test that would give you most of what you need.
This listener says this via text. We had a fungus kill a large section of our lawn in the late summer last year. What do you suggest we do to address it this year?
I think it would just depend on just making sure that you understand that it was a fungus, and I would just make sure that you can verify that. And there is a plant diagnostic laboratory. It's right across the hall from the soil testing laboratory at the University of Minnesota, where they would be able to verify that it was a disease. If indeed it was a disease that happened in the late summer, I would suspect it was probably something, and it caused death. It's probably Pythium. Or it's something related to overwatering, which for the last two summers probably would have been a little bit of a challenge. But, you know, if it's a low-lying area or anything like that, say in like a ditch, it could certainly collect and hold water. So I think I would just pay attention to where it's at and collect some samples to verify that it is a disease and not just a site condition, you know, something, you know, weather-related or for that particular site. Because you really have to correctly identify the problem before you can try to address it.
Yeah, and you can go to the Plant Disease Clinic website. It's PDC, like Plant Disease Clinic, PDC at umn.edu. They have good instructions for collecting samples, and this is true of any issues you might have, whether it's a tree or your lawn or your garden or a plant in your garden. And if you have questions, you can certainly call them and ask them, you know, just to make sure that you're collecting the right kind of sample for them.
Very good. Here's a text that says, I gave up on the rabbits eating my plants last year. Nothing I tried stopped them for long. I have a couple of plants that have come up. Any suggestions to stop their nibbling?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, so rabbit damage is one of the worst. This year has been one of the worst because we've had such high volumes of snow, and those rabbits can sit up on top of the snow. I was pruning my aronia, my chokeberry shrub yesterday, and there was feeding at chest level for me, and I'm 5'8". So those rabbits, they actually were climbing on top of snowdrifts, and then I realized they were climbing, I think, on top of our air conditioning unit and chewing off that tree. So it's been a bad year for rabbit damage. The important thing is to probably wait at this point and see how the plant recovers. If it's been girdled, in other words, if they've chewed off the bark around the base stems, that might, you know, you might lose that branch of that shrub. Protection from them going forward would be fencing with hardware cloth. I know that that is not attractive, but if you want to save them, that's one way. And we also, we tried blood meal, which is basically dried blood from a slaughterhouse. And it is, you can purchase it. It's an organic fertilizer. It has high nitrogen in it, but it's also somewhat repellent. And so we sprinkled that around the base of some trial plants. These were annual plants in a very naturalized area that we were doing an experiment with. And it managed to keep away the rabbits as well as deer, too. So that is one option. It's a bit anecdotal on my part, so I'm just sharing it with you as far as the experiences that we had. But it is something that that seemed to really repel them. But nothing is a better defense than a good fence.
No, that's really true. I learned that
for any critter
last year. This texter, I know we have to take a quick break here, but this texter says, I put seed on before the snow last fall. Now the snow is gone and it looks awful. Should I put more seed on it now?
You know, functionally, the situation hasn't changed. So, you know, the seed probably is just down below most of the thatch or residue on the surface, and is hopefully down at the soil surface. So I would just have some patience. You know, the situation hasn't changed. Have patience. Just see what comes up, and maybe you can overseed a little bit later on this spring. But patience is key.
All right. Very good. A quick break is in order. We're going to be right back with Julie and John here on our Smart Garden Show, 651-461-9226. Keep in mind, Andy Lindis will be joining us next hour for our home improvement show. Any kind of a home improvement question, keep those in mind, and we'll accept those, of course, by phone and text next hour. Here on News Talk 830, this is WCCO. Good morning. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show here every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour. This morning, if you're just joining us, Julie Weisenhorn and Dr. John Trappe from the U of M answering your lawn and garden questions. And Julie and John, we have about 6 million to go, so we could probably do another 3 or 4 hours easily. Since we can't, let's do kind of what we call a lightning round. Let's see, we did that. Boy, there's so many lawn questions, too. Here's another one. Which is better, redoing the front lawn is their project? Slit seeding or hydro seed after killing what is there now? Does one grow faster than the other? How often and how long as far as time? That comes from Chris in Montgomery.
I think that's kind of a mixed bag. I would prefer to slit seed, if you can, over the hydro seeding, but I think both can work just fine.
Okay. Hey, this is a question I know John, Julie will know we get quite often. This texter has a new dog, and they said, yes, our lawn was already showing damage last fall from her running and playing. Any ideas for new or different grass or ground cover?
Well, grasses are going to be the most traffic tolerant for kids or pets. So I would stick with the grass if you want to have a living playing surface there. And if you can, the Kentucky bluegrass and turf type tall fescue are the two most traffic tolerant species. And I would still give those a try, especially some newer improved varieties or cultivars, because they're much more traffic tolerant than some of the older ones.
You can also train the dog to utilize certain areas for its business. So okay, that takes some diligence, but it pays off in the end.
Great stuff.
Trimming question. Is it too late to trim a couple of small branches from my pin oak tree?
Probably not small branches. I wouldn't do any major pruning due to the potential for oak wilt. We're into the high-risk time now, April through mid-July.
Another tree question I see. When cutting down an ash tree that's diseased with emerald ash borer, are the beetles still alive and living in the tree, and for how long? If I burn, is that the best way to kill them? You're not supposed to burn those, are you?
Well, you're not supposed to move the wood around. What I would do is contact a certified arborist, and they'll be able to advise on that.
What about your city? Some forester?
City forester. Mm-hmm. You can also contact the Minnesota Department of Agriculture with those questions, too. We do have a web page on Emerald Ash Borer as well that links to that.
Got another critter question. This one, not moles, but voles. We have massive vole tunnels, destruction under the snow and the lawn. Any suggestions how to get rid of those?
I would just lightly rake away any of their burrows. you know, once things start greening up and start growing a little bit more, just rake away any of their kind of collection of materials and just allow the lawn to recover. Typically, there's not lawn death associated with the vole damage. It just, it looks nasty right now, but it'll bounce back.
Good. This texter is looking to plant alfalfa in their border garden. When's a good time to plant? Thank you. Love the show. Well, thank you for that.
Oh, I am not a cover crops expert. I would take a look at our website on cover crops, and that gives you timing for planting and also incorporating it into your soil so that it actually helps the soil. And that's on extension.umn.edu, and just you can Google cover crops.
Okay. This listener says, we live in Blaine, have sandy soil beneath the black soil hauled in more than 35 years ago. Mm. Could the soil shifted over the years due to tree roots? We have developed quite the dip in the yard over time. Should this simply be filled in with another haul of soil?
Yeah, that's a great question. I would consider it, that standpoint. I'm not sure how much it would have shifted. Julie, do you have any recommendations there?
Well, it sounds like I wonder if they've got kind of a layering effect, or if that topsoil has moved. That's kind of what I'm taking away from this question.
Mm-hmm.
I guess filling in the dip, but I incorporate it into the surrounding soil too, not just pile a bunch of new topsoil in this hole. So filling it in and tilling it into the existing soil, you'll have to reseed then, which you would do anyway.
Here's another question, a lawn question. Is corn gluten meal a good organic lawn fertilizer?
Yes, it can be. It is an organic option, and it does provide a little bit of weed control, although the data on that is a little bit of a mixed bag in terms of how well it works. But corn gluten meal is an option that is provides some nitrogen without supplying the phosphorus. So it can be a good organic option for a lawn care fertilizer.
As Julie knows, we've joked forever about Creeping Charlie, not joking maybe about it, but when we do get questions about it. But here's one. It says, for bee lawns and pollinator-friendly yards, wouldn't Creeping Charlie be a good flower to allow in the landscape?
No.
No.
And it's based on research that our colleague James Wolfen, who is was a graduate student in our department, and he looked at the nectar and pollen, and John, you can maybe speak to this too, and it's very inconsistent in Creeping Charlie. It's very minute, it's not very good quality, and it's really random in the flowers. So while the bees are moving amongst all these Creeping Charlie flowers, which there are many, they're really not getting much from a reward standpoint. So it's really not a good bee plant.
Yeah, and it just does such a great job of competing against everything else. You know, if your goal is to promote pollinator plants, you know, I would not want Creeping Charlie just because it'll outcompete even those as well. So I would consider trying to remove it even from that standpoint.
Julie and John, just about 2 minutes to go on the show. Here's another question. Can you apply crabgrass pre-emergent on an area that was seeded last fall?
I would avoid doing that just from, you know, I'm not sure exactly, you know, there's really only one product that can work, and it's going to have marginal activity on crabgrass. There's one product that is labeled for cool season seedlings that would be safe on those. But for the most part, I would focus on getting your overseeded areas up and growing, and then work on controlling the summer annuals through best management cultural practices. And then if indeed you need to, maybe next year, focus on those.
And you could also spot treat those, like the crabgrass too, right?
Great suggestion. Yeah, with a post-emergent control option after your seedlings have come up and after you've identified the summer annuals.
I know we've got less than a minute to go. You know, we haven't mentioned yet. We should mention, again, the university website, extension.umn.edu. Check it out. You're going to love it. But get to the Arboretum, right?
Right, right. Lots of things going on at the Arboretum, arb.umn.edu. It is warming up fast out there, so things are getting busy.
And the process is you have to go online to
right.
reserve a spot, but it makes that, I'll say it again, it makes driving parking really easy.
Yeah, and coming up, tickets are now on sale for the plant sale, which is the weekend of May 13th and 14th. So you can get on there. The slots are filling up. There's time slots for that, too.
And when are the Abiders playing next?
We are playing at Lupine Brewing Chili Fest on April 23rd. So we'll be out there. It's in Delano. And the proceeds from that event go to help a local charity.
Excellent. All right, Dr. John Trappi, great to hear from you. I hope we can call on you again. Julie, it's a pleasure as usual. Again, thanks to you both. Let's plan on doing this real soon. What do you say?
Sounds good, Denny. Have a happy Easter, everybody.
Yes.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you, Julie and John, here on A3OWCCO. Again, get those home improvement questions ready. Andy Lindis from Lindis Construction will be answering those questions. We're at 38 degrees now. We're going to see 61 degrees, but maybe 81 by midweek. Stay with us here on CCO.
At DSW, we ask the important questions, like, what shoes are you going to wear? Whether you're prepping for wedding season, festival season, or just planning the ultimate vacay, the right shoes can make or break an RSVP. So own the moment. You've got big plans, and we've got just the shoes. At the perfect price, of course. Get ready to get ready with Designer Shoe Warehouse. Head to your DSW store or DSW.com today, and let us surprise you.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Personal finance can feel like a pop quiz you didn't study for. This podcast is your study guide. On NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast, you'll hear from trusted journalists who explain the why behind major financial decisions. You'll get research-backed insights and clear pros and cons, whether you're planning a big purchase or just want to grow your wealth. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
Whoa, okay. This one says you get a free phone if you switch. Hey, this one also says you get a free phone if you switch.
Yeah, they all do, hon.
Huh. The T-Mobile one says their customers had the lowest wireless bills versus the other big guys over the past 5 years. And their latest experience plans have Netflix included, plus a year of Dash Pass by DoorDash.
Mm-mm-mm. Hang on, let me see that. Oh, yeah, we're switching.
That's what I'm talking about. Do we clap now or...
At T-Mobile, get savings that keep stacking up. That's value you can feel every day. And right now, bring your phone to T-Mobile and we'll give you $400 when you switch.
Savings based on Harris X billing snapshots from Q3 2021 to Q4 2025 compared to average AT&T and Verizon bills. Comparison excludes discounts, credits, and optional charges. $400 with new account on qualifying line. Unlocked device credit ported 90 plus days with device and carrier entirely redemption required. Virtual MasterCard typically takes 14 weeks, no cash access, and expires in 6 months. Card issued by Sunrise Banks N.A. member FDIC. Visit T-Mobile.com.
Testing season is right around the corner, and this is when confidence really matters. When kids take time to review key concepts and strengthen their skills before assessments, it can make all the difference. IXL helps reinforce what they're learning right now, so they walk into every test feeling prepared, capable, and confident. IXL is an award-winning online learning platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts. Designed for students from pre-K through 12th grade, IXL delivers personalized, interactive practice that adapts to your child's level and pace. It's an easy, effective way to support learning as the school year heads into its final stretch. Studies show kids who use IXL score higher on tests, proven in all 50 states. IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now, and listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLLearning.com/audio. Visit IXLLearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Yes, indeed. Welcoming your phone calls and text messages, your lawn and garden questions at 651-461-9226 on this holiday weekend. Julie Weisenhorn from the University of Minnesota is with us, and we have a special guest who's been with us before, but he is still special. And Julie, why don't you do the proper introduction and tell us about John?
Well, I think that eventually John will just be a regular. So.
I think you're right.
So, but he's a special guy anyway. So, yeah, John Trappy, Dr. John Trappy, he is our turf educator in extension. He's an agronomist, got a wealth of information about lawns and grasses. He also is an environmentalist and conservationist. And so I have heard from him in passing that he propagates chestnut trees in his house, and he does all sorts of other things like that. So, John, it's so great to have you here. I really appreciate you being on.
Yeah, thanks again. I've been really looking forward to getting back on, so I'm very happy to be here.
Excellent. I know our listeners are too, both Julie and John, because I'm seeing a whole lot of yard I haven't seen for months. Yay. It seems like I'm not saying it looks good, but at least it's there. And let me alert our listeners: as long as both John and Julie are on, if you have any kind of a turf question, any questions about your yard, by all means, give us a call or send a text. Again, here's the number, 651-461-9226. You know, we tend to get busy during this hour, big time. So don't wait. Call us or text us with your lawn and garden question. Now, let me ask John a question, Julie. People, as Julie will know, John, we'll get usually pretty early in the season. When can I rake my lawn? You can't do it yet, right?
Yeah, I would avoid trying to do too much just yet and allow things to basically start to warm up, the soil to dry out just a little bit, so that way when you're walking on it and you are, if you do try to remove any kind of dead or dying debris, you're not pulling up plants that would have come back. So try to have patience. I know everybody's basically got cabin fever and looking to get back out there, but just try to have patience and wait it out, and the lawn will start to green up soon enough.
Okay. I'm looking at another text that just came in, and it says this: if I overseeded my established lawn in the fall, can I use starter fertilizer in the spring? Any negatives to that?
Yeah, you can use starter fertilizer, and that's actually a pretty good strategy. If you've put down seed with the Minnesota phosphorus fertilizer law, you can apply fertilizers containing phosphorus if you have seeded. So I think that's a good strategy for doing that. But I would always recommend, anytime someone is trying to establish anything from seed to conduct a soil test just to verify what your soil nutrient test levels are at and if phosphorus would be beneficial.
Hey, John, do starter fertilizers ever contain pre-emergence?
Some starters, there's one product that I know of for sure that is safe on seedlings, and that's Siduron is the name of it, but otherwise there's most other pre-emergent herbicides may have some activity depending on what you're trying to seed. So that's a great point, Julie, as far as products to considerations to be made if you're considering trying to overseed or establish a new area while also trying to prevent things like summer annuals like crabgrass.
And would the packaging say on there, do not put on new seed or this contains a pre-emergent, or is it easy to see that on the package, do you think?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, so all herbicides, all pesticides are going to have a pesticide label. Right. You're required by law to follow that label, but just follow the instructions in there. They'll tell you how many days after you've put down, say, a pre-emergent that you can seed, for example.
Great.
All right. Looking at another question from a listener that just came in. Last fall, it says, I planted a bare root yellow lady slipper. Grower's instructions said to cover it with leaves after planting. When should I uncover it, is the question.
I would let it just come up through the leaves, unless you piled, a foot of leaves on top of it. But I would let it just kind of come up naturally. You can push those leaves aside, and just when it starts to come up, just tuck those leaves around it and protect that root, the roots from any kind of weather changes. But, yeah, that's a good luck, because that is a tricky plant to grow, but I'm glad you're following the grower's instructions. That's important.
Very good. Here's one for John. How soon after applying crabgrass preventer can I apply grass seed?
Well, we actually just touched on that. I would consult with the label, because that's going to depend on which product you applied, and the rate that you applied it at. So just check the label of the preventer herbicide, and it should be able to tell you exactly what to do.
Okay. How do I get my Canna rhizomes to get them ready to plant is the next question.
So take them out of where you've been storing them over the winter and clean them off. Hopefully they don't have any mold. If they do, you can scrape it off or wash it off and maybe treat with a fungicide for that mold so it doesn't grow back. Cut off any damaged areas, blackened areas, anything that feels soft. You can use a nice clean knife for that, a nice sharp knife. And then you can go ahead and pot them up and kind of get them going in your house right now. Put them in a sunny window, water them, and then transplant them. If you're going to put them in your garden, you can transplant them when the temperatures are warmer. Or if you're going to put them into a container, you could do that too.
All right. Again, here's our phone number. It also happens to be our text number, 651-461-9226. If you're just joining us, Julie Weisenhorn and John Trappe, Dr. John Trappe from the U of M, answering those questions. And I'm thinking, Julie and John, this might be, besides your expertise, this might be a good reason to get on the university website. What are some, texter says, good ground covers for our area here in the Twin Cities?
Yeah, so we have the Plant Elements of Design, which is a plant selection database tool, and you can enter in your site conditions and click on ground cover, whether it's a woody ground cover or herbaceous ground cover, whatever you're looking for, and click search, and you'll come up with any plants that match those criteria. So that's where you can find non-turf ground covers. John, over to you.
So if, grasses are obviously a great ground cover, but grasses are going to require a little bit more sunlight than some of the traditional broadleaf ground covers. So I would just pay attention to that, just make sure that it's getting at least a couple of hours of direct sunlight. If you're looking for something that's very low maintenance, the fine fescues are a great option for having limited mowing requirements and other inputs like fertilizer and pesticides. So the fine fescues are great.
What about something like a bee lawn?
Yeah, bee lawns are a great option, and obviously they're really growing in popularity. So a bee lawn is just simply incorporating pollinator-friendly species for our native and naturalized pollinators. And we have all kinds of resources on the extension website, extension.umn.edu, for finding information on how to grow, how to plant and maintain a bee lawn.
All right. I know we have to take a break here. I want to pass along this text and maybe give you both time to think about it. Good question. And then we'll take a break. Again, if you are just joining us and if you happen to have a question about your lawn, you've hit the jackpot, because not only do we have Julie Weisenhorn's expertise, but Dr. John Trappe, can we call him the turf? John, would you mind if we call you the turf guru?
I suppose. I don't mind. It wouldn't have been my first choice, but
all right, we'll
green, I think, was one title we used once.
We'll do some research and see if we can't get some other answers before other titles. But anyway, let me pose this question, then we'll take a quick break. Turf question. I cannot find, texter says, an organic lawn care company to serve the Lindstrom area due to long distance from the metro. Question is, if I start to do my own organic lawn care, where can I find easy-to-follow steps as I want to improve my soil each year and crowd out weeds? I have completed soil testing at the U of M and cannot understand what to do next. Lots of clay soil in this Lindstrom area. You guys think about that. We'll take this break and be back on the other side of our Smart Garden Show. 38 degrees. We're on our way to 61, about the same for Easter Sunday tomorrow, with a chance of showers. But how about this? Wednesday, we could hit near 81 degrees. Oh. Right now, 38 degrees here on News Talk 830. This is WCCO. Mm-hmm. Good Saturday morning to you. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show here every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour. Thanks for joining us this morning. We have, if you are just joining us, Julie Weisenhorn and Dr. John Trappe from the University of Minnesota answering lawn and garden questions. I emphasize lawn because John Trappe is our turf expert this morning. You probably have heard him on the station before, and you will hear him again, as Julie and John promise. But we are have a busy morning today. Let's see how many folks we can help out. Let's grab some phone calls. But before we do, I posed a question from a listener about organic lawn care. What do you guys have for an answer?
So the first thing is just to address the trying to find an organic, you know, a company that would do organic lawn care. And I would suggest starting with the Minnesota Nursery and Landscape Association website and then searching from there. So that's mnla.biz. And you can just search for organic lawn care in your area. And you might be able to find somebody who is unlisted otherwise. But as far as resources for organic lawn care, we don't have anything that's specifically for that's listed as like a truly organic lawn care option. We do have a low input turf website that's on turf.umn.edu where we have basically just some low input options. There's also an older document called Fertilizing Lawns that was released in, it's a little bit older, but it also has some information on some of the, some different organic lawn care options. Another thing you can do is just reach out to me directly and then find me and we can chat about some different organic options as well. So, I think those are both great starting points, but that's a great suggestion as far as, something that we could improve upon and make some more resources available.
Very good. Now let's get back to some phone calls. Donna, first up, you're calling in from Bloomington, I believe. Donna, thanks for waiting. What is your question, please?
We have large mounds of dirt from the activity of moles. How do we eradicate the moles, and how do we prevent future problems like that?
Moles. Oh, big question.
But if there are moles in the lawn, you know, I always suggest just basically grabbing a lawn chair and a spade and trying to control them that way, because there's some other control options like baits and things like that for removing them. And you can't really control their, you know, what they're feeding on, because they're mostly feeding on earthworms. So, and generally speaking, we want those in our lawns. So really, it's just manually removing them, unfortunately. And there's not much that you can do in the way of discouraging them.
You could always call a pest control person who can set,
sure.
Well, unless you have maybe some small pets, or that's kind of dangerous, I guess. But, there's those what I call guillotines.
Those spike things. That's it.
Yeah, that's tough, because they can do a whole lot of damage. I've seen it.
What should she do about the mounds and stuff?
Great point. So I would just suggest just stepping them down anytime you see them, and especially before mowing, just to make sure that you don't end up scalping or anything. But if you just step them down, typically they retrace their steps, a couple of times a day. They retrace their burrows a couple of times a day. So they're kind of easy to track where they're at. If you're just kind of patient and just watch them, you can get them that way.
I know we're not talking, it's not a critter show, but are there usually more than one at a time? Is there like a family of them, like mice?
There definitely can be, but a lot of times they just a single mole can do quite a bit of damage. Wow. It's really, that's kind of a silver lining. It's, if you remove one, a lot of times you can remove a lot of the damage, but sometimes there's more than one.
Yeah. All right, Donna, good luck. Marlis is next up here calling in from Lakeville this morning. Marlis, what is your question, please?
Yes, good morning. My question is about African violet. I've had one as a gift for a couple of years, and it did fine. Then when it needed a bigger pot, it came in a plastic pot. I put it in what I thought was the ultimate, in a clay pot. Right. And since the leaves have started, they look pinched. They kind of curve downward. Every time the outer leaf would hit the edge of the pot, it would rot and fall off at that point. And it just kept doing it. And I called the extension office, got some good help. But I'm wondering, she said, put it into a plastic pot because violets draw the salt into the, or the salt gets drawn into the clay pot. Violets don't like that. And the thing, I had, it was blooming beautifully. It had just finished blooming and has four more shoots coming up. It's trying to bloom, but it looks like it's dying. It has pinched, you know, brown leaves, little brown on some of the leaves. And I'm just wondering if you've heard of that before. I thought clay pots were the ultimate.
Yeah, I don't know of anything about the salt. How are you fertilizing it? Are you using an African violet fertilizer?
Yes, I am. Uh-huh, and it started blooming beautifully after that.
Okay. And are you using it at half strength or full strength?
I feed it once a month at what the full strength it says for them.
So yeah, so I'm just, I don't know about
repotted it into a plastic now.
Okay,
I put it back into a plastic. I'm gonna see what happens, but I just thought I need all the knowledge I can get. It looks like it's gonna pass out on me.
Yeah, I don't know if it could just be transplant shock. Also, sometimes they're sensitive about that. But yeah, I think either pot would have been fine. I would hold back on the fertilizer because that's a very small amount of soil, and it could be too much fertilizer for the plant, and it could be burning the plant. And then be careful, water it from the bottom versus from the top, because it can get some crown rot on it, and sometimes it can also damage those initial leaves that are at the base of the plant. So see how it goes. Call back in. Love to hear how it's doing in its plastic pot. And we do have a website on African violets on our houseplant section at extension.umn.edu. But I don't think there's anything about salt. Okay. But I'd hold back on the fertilizer.
I know we have to take a break for weather because it's going to be quite a change coming up. But I wanted to pose this question because it is probably on a lot of folks' mind, including yours truly. Will lawns recover after last year's drought? What do you think, John?
Well, again, silver lining with having this all this snow is that we are, recharging groundwater table. And, this has been, kind of a great winter for that. So, but the lawns, I think, let's just say I'm bullish or I'm optimistic that they're going to bounce back. So I think this has been a great winter for that.
Yeah, for sure. That's good. We wait and see. All right, hang on. We'll take this break. We have about another half hour of the show to go, so don't go away. 651-461-9226. Here on 830 WCCO, stay with us. Good Saturday morning to you. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show here every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour. Welcoming your lawn and garden questions at 651-461-9226. If you're just joining us, Julie Weishorn and Dr. John Trappe in from the University of Minnesota answering those lawn and garden questions, especially today if you have a turf question for John Trappe. That's great. Or any garden question, of course, we take as we always do. Boy, there's just so many callers and texters as well. Let's get back to it. Roger, I think, is next up. We've been waiting in St. Paul to ask you a question. Roger, thank you. What is your question?
Good morning. Thank you. It's for John, and it's not a turf question, but my dad collected American chestnuts probably 80 or 90 years ago, and we've kept them in a quart jar. Is there any chance they're viable?
There are if they were kept dry with low humidity and there's a pretty good chance of that. I mean you basically have nothing. There's really no harm in trying. But there is a reinvigorated effort for releasing a new genetically modified American chestnut that's resistant to the blight. So that could be grafted onto those legacy American chestnuts that you have from your dad. So that's something to consider and could be kind of a neat compromise for still being able to grow a tree that's functionally extinct.
A neat idea.
Functionally extinct. I have never heard that. That's kind of scary sounding.
I'm going to write that down. Thank you, Roger, for that. Gene is on the horn calling in from Eagan, I believe, this morning. Thank you for waiting. Gene, what's your question?
Hi there. My husband recently discovered a couple of chemicals he uses on the lawn. One I know people have used for a long, long time. The other one I think is relatively new, at least to the garden centers. Milorganite. Can you overdo milorganite? Because with my husband, more is better for everything. And the other one is this type of lawn aerating chemical. And then you put this down and it kind of eats away. It's essentially doing the job of when you come around with those aerating machines. Instead, it does it internally in the ground and kind of attacks some of the, anyhow, it opens up air pockets down there. I can't remember what it's called, but those two things, I'm wondering if you can overdo either one of them.
Well, I certainly think you can overdo. I mean, you can overdo water, for example. So, but I would, you know, as far as let's address the milorganite first. I would just make sure that you have a soil test that's showing that you need to apply phosphorus, because there is phosphorus in the milorganite fertilizer. And I would just first and foremost ensure that, you know, that you're applying appropriately according to the Minnesota Phosphorus Fertilizer Law. But the other thing is that, you know, there is nitrogen and iron, and sometimes you can create flushes of growth if you're over-fertilizing. I would just fertilize based on your plant needs and, you know, as far as just notice on how the plant itself is growing. And, you know, you can certainly over-fertilize, and I would we do have a, you know, on our website, we do have a fertilizer schedule as far as recommendations on how much to fertilizer in terms of nitrogen, and that's where I would start with that product. The liquid lawn dethatcher, typically, you know, I'll just be frank and say that those products typically do not work. So for the most part, I would, you know, I think you might be able to overdo it. I'm not sure how much is being put down, but if that's your goal, is trying to remove the thatch, realistically, the best way of doing that is through an actual aerification process or mechanical aerification.
John, I was wondering if Jean was going to be alluding to gypsum on her aeration question.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So gypsum is a calcium product, and it's really it's just a way of providing soluble calcium for your plants. If the question is whether or not if you can overapply it, I think you certainly can. Again, your soil test would tell you what your calcium levels are and whether or not your soil would benefit from gypsum. So I think that sounds like a really great starting point for really just seeing if indeed you actually need to apply it. And there would even be recommendations on the soil test report for telling you how much to apply.
Let's talk about that a little bit. We had a comment earlier from a listener, a texter, about getting a soil test. The U of M does it. What is the process to get that done?
So the University of Minnesota does have a soil testing lab, and it, as far as on their website is soiltest.cfans.umn.edu. I know that's a lot, but if you just web search for soil test UMN, you will find it. But there's some recommendations on there on how to collect a soil sample for your lawn or garden, and then, again, how to interpret and understand the soil test report, the results from your soil test report. So that's where I would start, but anytime is a great time. Anytime when the ground is actually thawed is a great time to collect a soil sample, and I think that's a great it's a great starting point if you don't know what your soil test values are, or if you have a new home or garden area or anything like that. It's a relatively cheap. I think it's around $19 for a basic soil test that would give you most of what you need.
This listener says this via text. We had a fungus kill a large section of our lawn in the late summer last year. What do you suggest we do to address it this year?
I think it would just depend on just making sure that you understand that it was a fungus, and I would just make sure that you can verify that. And there is a plant diagnostic laboratory. It's right across the hall from the soil testing laboratory at the University of Minnesota, where they would be able to verify that it was a disease. If indeed it was a disease that happened in the late summer, I would suspect it was probably something, and it caused death. It's probably Pythium. Or it's something related to overwatering, which for the last two summers probably would have been a little bit of a challenge. But, you know, if it's a low-lying area or anything like that, say in like a ditch, it could certainly collect and hold water. So I think I would just pay attention to where it's at, and collect some samples to verify that it is a disease and not just a site condition, something, weather related or for that particular site, because you really have to correctly identify the problem before you can try to address it.
Yeah, and you can go to the Plant Disease Clinic website. It's PDC, like Plant Disease Clinic, PDC at umn.edu. They have good instructions for collecting samples, and this is true of any issues you might have, whether it's a tree or your lawn or your garden or a plant in your garden. And if you have questions, you can certainly call them and ask them, just to make sure that you're collecting the right kind of sample for them.
Very good. Here's a text that says, I gave up on the rabbits eating my plants last year. Nothing I tried stopped them for long. I have a couple of plants that have come up. Any suggestions to stop their nibbling?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, so rabbit damage is one of the worst. This year has been one of the worst because we've had such high volumes of snow, and those rabbits can sit up on top of the snow. I was pruning my aronia, my chokeberry shrub, yesterday, and there was feeding at chest level for me, and I'm 5'8". So those rabbits, they actually were climbing on top of snowdrifts, and then I realized they were climbing, I think, on top of our air conditioning unit and chewing off that tree. So it's been a bad year for rabbit damage. The important thing is to probably wait at this point and see how the plant recovers. If it's been girdled, in other words, if they've chewed off the bark around the base stems, that might, you might lose that branch of that shrub. Protection from them going forward would be fencing with hardware cloth. I know that that is not attractive, but if you want to save them, that's one way. And we also, we tried blood meal, which is basically dried blood from a slaughterhouse. And it is, you can purchase it. It's an organic fertilizer. It has high nitrogen in it. But it's also somewhat repellent. And so we sprinkled that around the base of some trial plants. These were annual plants in a very naturalized area that we were doing an experiment with. And it managed to keep away the rabbits as well as deer, too. So that is one option. It's a bit anecdotal on my part, so I'm just sharing it with you as far as the experiences that we had. But it is something that that seemed to really repel them. But nothing is a better defense than a good fence.
No, that's really true. I learned that
for any critter
last year. This texter, I know we have to take a quick break here, but this texter says, I put seed on before the snow last fall. Now the snow is gone and it looks awful. Should I put more seed on it now?
Functionally, the situation hasn't changed. So, the seed probably is just down below most of the thatch or residue on the surface, and is hopefully down at the soil surface. So I would just have some patience. The situation hasn't changed. Have patience. Just see what comes up, and maybe you can overseed a little bit later on this spring. But patience is key.
All right. Very good. A quick break is in order. We are going to be right back with Julie and John here on our Smart Garden Show, 651-461-9226. Keep in mind, Andy Lindis will be joining us next hour for our home improvement show. Any kind of a home improvement question, keep those in mind, and we'll accept those, of course, by phone and text next hour. Here on News Talk 830, this is WCCO. Good morning. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show here every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour. This morning, if you're just joining us, Julie Weisenhorn and Dr. John Trappe from the U of M answering your lawn and garden questions. And Julie and John, we have about 6 million to go, so we could probably do another 3 or 4 hours easily. Since we can't, let's do kind of what we call a lightning round. Let's see, we did that. Boy, there's so many lawn questions, too. Here's another one. Which is better, redoing the front lawn is their project? Slit seeding or hydro seed after killing what is there now? Does one grow faster than the other? How often and how long as far as time? That comes from Chris in Montgomery.
I think that's kind of a mixed bag. I would prefer to slit seed, if you can, over the hydro seeding, but I think both can work just fine.
Okay. This is a question I know John Julie will know we get quite often. This texter has a new dog, and they said our lawn was already showing damage last fall from her running and playing. Any ideas for new or different grass or ground cover?
Well, grasses are going to be the most traffic tolerant for kids or pets. So I would stick with the grass if you want to have a living playing surface there. And if you can, the Kentucky bluegrass and turf type tall fescue are the two most traffic tolerant species. And I would still give those a try, especially some newer improved varieties or cultivars, because they're much more traffic tolerant than some of the older ones.
You can also train the dog to utilize certain areas for its business. So that takes some diligence, but it pays off in the end.
Great suggestion.
Trimming question. Is it too late to trim a couple of small branches from my pin oak tree?
Probably not small branches. I wouldn't do any major pruning due to the potential for oak wilt. We're into the high-risk time now, April through mid-July.
Another tree question I see. When cutting down an ash tree that's diseased with emerald ash borer, are the beetles still alive and living in the tree, and for how long? If I burn, is that the best way to kill them? You're not supposed to burn those, are you?
Well, you're not supposed to move the wood around. What I would do is contact a certified arborist, and they'll be able to advise on that.
What about your city? Some forester?
Or a city forester. Mm-hmm. You can also contact the Minnesota Department of Agriculture with those questions, too. We do have a web page on Emerald Ash Borer as well that links to that.
Got another critic question. This one, not moles, but voles. We have massive vole tunnels, destruction under the snow and the lawn. Any suggestions how to get rid of those?
I would just lightly rake away any of their burrows. You know, once things start greening up and start growing a little bit more, just rake away any of their kind of collection of materials and just allow the lawn to recover. Typically, there's not lawn death associated with the vole damage. It looks nasty right now, but it'll bounce back.
Good. This texter is looking to plant alfalfa in their border garden. When's a good time to plant? Thank you. Love the show. Well, thank you for that.
Oh, I am not a cover crops expert. I would take a look at our website on cover crops, and that gives you timing for planting and also incorporating it into your soil so that it actually helps the soil. And that's on extension.umn.edu, and just you can Google cover crops.
Okay. This listener says, we live in Blaine, have sandy soil beneath the black soil hauled in more than 35 years ago. Could the soil shifted over the years due to tree roots? We have developed quite the dip in the yard over time. Should this simply be filled in with another haul of soil?
Yeah, that's a great question. I would consider it, that standpoint. I'm not sure how much it would have shifted. Julie, do you have any recommendations there?
Well, it sounds like I wonder if they've got kind of a layering effect, or if that topsoil has moved. That's kind of what I'm taking away from this question.
Mm-hmm.
I guess filling in the dip, but I incorporate it into the surrounding soil too, not just pile a bunch of new topsoil in this hole. So filling it in and tilling it into the existing soil, you'll have to reseed then, which you would do anyway.
Here's another question, the lawn question. Is corn gluten meal a good organic lawn fertilizer?
Yes, it can be. It is an organic option, and it does provide a little bit of weed control, although the data on that is a little bit of a mixed bag in terms of how well it works. But corn gluten meal is an option that is provides some nitrogen without supplying the phosphorus. So it can be a good organic option for a lawn care fertilizer.
As Julie knows, we've joked forever about Creeping Charlie, not joking maybe about it, but when we do get questions about it. But here's one. It says, for bee lawns and pollinator-friendly yards, wouldn't Creeping Charlie be a good flower to allow in the landscape?
No.
No.
And it's based on research that our colleague James Wolfen, who is was a graduate student in our department, and he looked at the nectar and pollen. And John, you can maybe speak to this too. And it's very inconsistent in Creeping Charlie. It's very minute. It's not very good quality. And it's really random in the flowers. So while the bees are moving amongst all these Creeping Charlie flowers, which there are many, they're really not getting much from a reward standpoint. So it's really not a good bee plant.
Yeah, and it just does such a great job of competing against everything else. You know, if your goal is to promote pollinator plants, you know, I would not want Creeping Charlie just because it'll outcompete even those as well. So just, you know, I would consider trying to remove it even from that standpoint.
Julie and John, just about 2 minutes to go on the show. Here's another question. Can you apply crabgrass pre-emergent on an area that was seeded last fall?
Well, I think that I would avoid doing that just from, you know, I'm not sure exactly, you know, there's really only one product that can work and it's going to have marginal activity on crabgrass. There's one product that is labeled for cool season seedlings that would be safe on those. But for the most part, I would just focus on getting your overseeded areas up and growing. And then work on controlling the summer annuals through best management cultural practices. And then if indeed you need to, maybe next year, focus on those.
And you could also spot treat those, like the crabgrass too, right?
Great suggestion. Yeah, with a post-emergent control option after your seedlings have come up and after you've identified the summer annuals.
I know we've got less than a minute to go. You know, we haven't mentioned yet. We should mention, again, the university website, extension.umn.edu. Check it out. You're going to love it. But get to the Arboretum, right?
Right, right. Lots of things going on at the Arboretum, arb.umn.edu. It is warming up fast out there, so things are getting busy.
And the process is you have to go online to reserve a spot, but it makes that, I'll say it again, it makes driving, parking really easy.
Yeah, and coming up, tickets are now on sale for the plant sale, which is the weekend of May 13th and 14th. So you can get on there. The slots are filling up. There's time slots for that, too.
And when are the Abiders playing next?
We are playing at Lupine Brewing Chili Fest on April 23rd. So we'll be out there. It's in Delano. And the proceeds from that event go to help a local charity.
Excellent. All right, Dr. John Trappi, great to hear from you. I hope we can call on you again. Julie, it's a pleasure as usual. again, thanks to you both. Let's plan on doing this real soon. What do you say?
Sounds good, Denny. Have a happy Easter, everybody.
Yes.
Yeah, too. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Julie and John, here at A3O WCCO. Again, get those home improvement questions ready. Andy Lindis from Lindis Construction will be answering those questions. We're at 38 degrees now. We're going to see 61 degrees, but maybe 81 by midweek. Stay with us here on CCO.
Nerds.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ever Google a money question and end up 12 tabs deep with 12 different answers? This podcast is your shortcut back to clarity. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast breaks down financial decisions with a team of trusted journalists. They explain the why behind decisions like investing, home buying, and choosing credit cards with clear, research-backed insights. No jargon, no misinformation. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
Whoa, okay. This one says you get a free phone if you switch. Hey, this one also says you get a free phone if you switch.
Yeah, they all do, hon.
Huh. The T-Mobile one says their customers had the lowest wireless bills versus the other big guys over the past 5 years. And their latest experience plans have Netflix included, plus a year of Dash Pass by DoorDash.
Mm-mm-mm. Hang on, let me see that. Oh, yeah, we're switching.
That's what I'm talking about. Do we clap now or...
At T-Mobile, get savings that keep stacking up. That's value you can feel every day. And right now, bring your phone to T-Mobile and we'll give you $400 when you switch.
Savings based on Harris X billing snapshots from Q3 2021 to Q4 2025 compared to average AT&T and Verizon bills. Comparison excludes discounts, credits, and optional charges. $400 with new account on qualifying line. Unlocked device credit ported 90 plus days with device and carrier entirely redemption required. Virtual MasterCard typically takes 14 weeks. No cash access and expires in 6 months. Card issued by Sunrise Banks N.A. Member FDIC. Visit T-Mobile.com.
At Lowe's, we're about to kick off something epic for fans who want more messy. And trust us, you'll want to be a rewards member when it happens. Join for free and get access to messy exclusives, surprises, and more. Head to Lowe's.com/moremessy. Now's the time to get in, because members get more at Lowe's. Loyalty programs subject to terms and conditions. Visit Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Diamond Dynasty has all new Red Diamond cards and World Baseball Classic content in MLB The Show 26. Collect your favorites and compete against the best. MLB The Show 26 is available now on PlayStation 5, Xbox Series XS, and Nintendo Switch. Rated E for everyone. Officially licensed by MLB Players, Inc.